You are now listening to FemRegard Podcast with Tessa Markle
and Carolina Alvarez.
Fem. Hey, Fem Fam.
Hello. Hello, Fam. We love you. Guys, we are wrapping up the season. This is going to be our second to last guest episode. The next one will be a solo because you love your girls and we got to keep you up to date. We got to tell you what's going on with Sync and all those things. But we are so excited to end our last guest interview episode with the gal we're bringing on today, because it really, I think, helps if any of you are starting out your projects, get in the mindset of what happens in post and specifically in the editing world. It's a landscape that Tess and I have continuously over the years just learned more and more, and there's just so many facets to it, guys. There's so many little layers. Like, you don't really have the one person that does it all. There's so many specialties that are involved, whether it's just the editorial, the VFX, the sound, the color. But today we really focus on the editorial. And Tessa, why don't you go ahead and intro our gal who's coming on
today. So today we have Christy Shemek, who was, again, recommended by Ryan Little. Half of our guests this season were recommended by him. We love him.
And we love that.
Yes, but he had suggested her to us not only to have on the show, but to talk to about Sync, which we go into a little tiny bit in this episode. We chatted with her more after. And I do want to bring up, listeners, because of Sync, we are working in overtime and working really hard to get this production made this summer. So, unfortunately, we'll be taking a little break from the podcast after our solo episode. Just to give you guys a heads up, don't worry, we'll be back. We just don't know exactly when, because we need to concentrate on making this movie and, you know, our full-time jobs and lives and sleeping once in a while. But back to Christy. Christy is an independent editor, which I think is amazing because she's been on some really awesome films and TV shows, and she got her start in the reality space, but she has just been chugging along and she is just doing a great job. She knows so much, and it was so enlightening to talk to her. You know, I feel like there were so many little tips and tricks and things that I'm like, oh yeah, which I swear it's like everybody that does like post stuff, I'm always like, oh, of course, that makes total sense, why wouldn't you? Like, but it's not stuff you think of because you just don't have that training and that mindset. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy this episode, especially if any of you are amateur editors. But even if you're not, even if that's something you are not interested in at all, as a filmmaker, it is really helpful to know what they do, what they can do, what their limitations are, how the process goes. So I think you guys will really get a lot out of this episode.
Absolutely. I think you nailed that, Tessa. And just bringing up that in this episode, you know, we really highlight what you can do on actual production day and onset to better eliminate problems in post. That saves you time and money. So definitely, even if you're not interested in, like Tessa said, the editing space, this is such a valuable episode to take notes on what you can be doing on set to avoid issues. So I really love that you use the word enlightened. So guys, be prepared to be enlightened. And we'll talk to you guys real soon. We're so excited to kind of get into conversation with you today on your journey as an editor for aspiring editors who are listening to the podcast and are curious, because as we are actors turned producers turned filmmakers, we've had to learn
turned everything.
Yeah. I always say when we got into editing that it took me 3 years to really crack down Adobe Premiere. And I was working on my 2009 like MacBook Pro that like was considered vintage at the Melrose Mac store, because she needed repairs, she needed new fans, and they were like, yeah, this is this is a lot. This is really old. So I tell people, you know, the amount of patience, that little rainbow, like we're thinking like every 5 seconds, if I was able to learn the basics of editing, so can you. Like, it's a whole thing. But enough about me. I really became to like love that side of storytelling. And so I want to know, I guess your first experience, was it on an old ancient computer system where you're like, I have to crack this code? And yeah, tell us what kind of like got you there.
Totally. You know, it's interesting because when I was young, I never thought of myself as like that into filmmaking. I loved going to the movies. My family was really into watching them, but I never really thought of it as a career. And then, but I was always
most
like,
people don't.
I know, right? Yeah, like you just don't even know logistically. Making? Yeah. Like what? How you would do that, like how it would be a job. And so, of course, but I was that kid that was like running around with my parents' video camera. I'd like ask to borrow it. And then, so like, I would say that was like my first introduction to like in-camera editing, which was, of course, when I was young, that was like, you basically did it with a tape deck or with your camera. So that's kind of like, yeah, exactly. Like all manual. So that's like how I first started doing it, was just like in-camera editing with my parents' video camera. And then in high school, I did take some media classes. But again, I'm old enough that like we were doing deck to deck, like tape decks, you know, transfers and cuts like that. And then we did use very early versions of like Final Cut and Premiere, like when they were first, you know, getting off the ground. And so yeah, I had a pretty early introduction as far as playing around with it, but I didn't really get into it until like the end of high school, early college, when I was like really started to get interested in the idea of it being a job and a career and kind of playing more with what the possibilities were.
Wow. Like, I mean, that still sounds pretty early to me, Tessa, right? Like you're already messing around with the camera. Like you had an interest. You probably just was like, I don't know if this is a real career. Like, what is this? Yeah. So was it in college where you kind of took any, did you take any cinema studies or like in the editing space, media classes?
Yeah, I did. Actually, I was really fortunate. The year before I went to college, my high school teacher could see my interest. One of my media teacher, Sean Kennedy, shout out. And he lined me up to be on a feature film that summer before I went to my first college. I know. I mean, which was so odd, but like also, awesome.
Shout out. Like I'm from,
I know. He like changed my life. Like he was such a great teacher, and he could just see, like, compared to all the other kids, that I really had an interest and affinity for it. So
that's my teachers.
I know, seriously.
Teachers.
They're really life changing. And so I was like on that team, I did like art. I was the PA. So I just did everything. I ran coffee. I drove cars I should have never been driving. I like did art. I did, you know, and I just did whatever. But it really like sparked the interest to then when I got into school, I was still, you know, trying to decide. But ultimately, I pretty quickly landed in film. I did some of the intro classes and then like immediately like went for the program and, you know, went from there. So yeah, I did get into it pretty early as far as college goes, for sure.
And did you at that point know that editing was specifically like what you had the most affinity for, or were you still figuring that out?
I was still figuring it out, but I did find like in our classes, they would have us each like take on different positions and then rotate. And every time I came back to editing, I loved it. And other people in the program hated it so much that they would like give me their projects and be like, why don't you do this? Because they like really didn't like sitting in the chair. And I was all about it, like sitting in a quiet room and solving a puzzle. Yeah.
I'm
here for it. So I figured out pretty quickly that that's what I wanted to do. And just because, yeah, for some reason, it's the thing that spoke to me. Like it just, I've always really liked puzzle solving and really detail oriented work. And I think that was like the initial inklings was just like, I love sitting down and solving a problem. And that is exactly what editorial is.
100%. Oh, 100, 1,000, 10,000%.
A million.
No, I really love that you said that because I think that's the kind of person that will love it is if you are able to really sit down and find these technical problems. Aside from this beautiful, colorful way to put together a story, there is a lot of that. And that's why you have to have like patience to like learn a software. Cause for me, it was like, I am not tech savvy, and it forced me to like really adapt to that. And now I'm like, it's just making me such a better filmmaker and problem solver. And like where I'm at, how I landed basically my job that I'm at today, it's cause like, that is literally what I do all day. And it's like mental exercises. But what about to people where they're like, well, I don't know. That still sounds like really like scary to me then. Like, I think I like to solve problems, but I'm not sure. I don't know. What is this? Like, what can you say, you know, at least for yourself, like, is it just something that takes time, or were you just like, no, I'm a wizard. I just chop-a-da-chop-chop. Like, you know, like I said, for me, it took me a long time to figure it out, and I was working on an ancient system. But for you, like, I guess what are, to make this question make sense, what are, like, software that you would advise beginners to look at? And, like, computers, is there, there's something, some way someone who's interested can set themselves up for success and they're not working on the most complex, like, thing? Like, you know, that's just like, I always think that sometimes you think you need to look at the most fancy equipment or like setup. And it's like, no, like start here. This is how you can really like get into it. Do you have any advice on that?
Totally. I think there are so many valuable like assets now that I didn't have when I was young. Like one of the, like I would just use your phone and use iMovie on your phone, or even TikTok has some like great basic like editorial basic software.
I hated it, but now I think they've improved. But before I was like, oh, InShot is my like go-to.
Yeah.
Shout out to InShot app.
Yeah, right? But, like, there's so many apps now that have like those, the basic functionality that gets you started on just putting those pieces together. Like even if you're cutting photos together, like one of the first assignments I ever got was, I mean, again, this shows my age, but we had to like video record photos and like zoom in and out. But then the editorial part of it was like adding dissolves and adding in the most basic software. Right. And like, even if you're doing that on your phone with photos you have, and you're like making a montage of photos, like that gets you in the mindset of timing and pacing and what you want to see next to each other and how you're creating a story through images, which is ultimately what I'm doing all day. Is it's just, you know, putting the right images next to each other, or the most optimal, or whatever I feel is the most optimal, or the director feels is the most optimal to create the best version of the story. And so I think you can do that with really the most basic of softwares, like literally on your phone, like whatever your phone pulls up, you can try it on that and get started on something like that.
Yeah. And I think too, like before I really got into the filmmaking aspect of this industry, like I didn't realize how much storytelling there was in editing, you know, because in my mind it was kind of just like, well, you know, you shoot all this and you just have to put it in the order of the script and choose the best takes, right? But like it's so much more than that.
And
it's amazing to see how much it can affect the story and change it and improve it, and just like the different options you have with the different ways you edit it.
Yeah. I mean, one of the biggest things about editorial is just that there really are infinite possibilities. And so the thing that you're helping the team like come together on is narrowing down to the one version you're ready to like show the world and send out. And I don't think movies are, they like get sent out the door. I don't think they're ever like, you know what? Perfection. We're done. Perfection. We've just made it everything we thought it would be, you know. Never. Instead, it's more, exactly. Instead, it's more of this collaborative, like, conversation, really, with the whole team and with audience members when you're doing previews about what makes this story sing and what helps the audience feel what we're trying to portray. And, like, and sometimes it literally is, like, moving two different takes next to each other or different images. Like, even the same shots you've been using for months, if you just switch the order a little bit, sometimes that's what does it. Like, it's so... It's because, again, when you have like infinite possibility, it's sometimes you can get bogged down in that. But it's really about like, okay, did this piece that I'm seeing 100 times, thousands of times over and over again, is it still speaking to me or is it not? And if not, why is it not? Is it because I've seen it so many times or is it because it's really not working and there's a better version of that? Like a really easy way to, not easy, comedy is really hard, but what I was going to say is, like comedy, if a joke makes you laugh after seeing it 50 times, like if it still makes you giggle, that joke is working, you know? And so there are certain like key things that you come to discover when you've been doing it for a while that you're like, okay, that's hitting me the same every time, or it's still giving me emotion, even though I've seen it so many times that I think that aspect is working. So what are the pieces that aren't doing the same for me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right, because I love the comedy analogy. I never thought of it like that. Because with, as you stated, with editing too, it can be a timing thing and like really feeling that. Like comedy is also like a very much timing thing. And if it's timed correctly, you probably will get a laugh every single time. But I can see that it's still so difficult, like the intricacies of like, you know, how an audience is even, you know, that's its own organism. They're being affected in a different way. So I just really admire editors who can look at that over and over and over. For me, when I work on our stuff, like the first project that was really hard where I really learned my basic editing stuff or skills is that I had to take a break. And I would recommend that personally to anyone who's like, feeling really bogged down. It's okay if you need to step away. But like it's your job. Like you have to like figure that out. And I don't have a timeline.
Like one of my big things is like taking a break from the edit when you can. Like I have like a pretty, I wouldn't say strict policy, but I try to like take a walk every afternoon just to clear my head. Like I always make sure I take lunch. I make sure I take time to walk a little bit because it is really easy to just get like sit in the room for 16 hours tunnel straight. Vision, but then I find that like when you get into those spaces, usually the work isn't as good. You've gotten into like a rut or a hole and you haven't allowed your brain to be like, let's just rest for a minute, you know? And so I do actually think that that's a super important part of our jobs as well. Like it's such a mental job. It's so like mentally taxing. And I think we forget, like, I think we all do this, like playing on our phones, whatever. We all get in these like modes of just keeping our brain going all the time. And, you know, that's not where the greatest creativity comes from. It comes from like a brain that can like, again, think about a problem, at least take a few minutes to think about something. And I have a lot of different techniques for how to look at something differently. Sometimes I watch the movie totally silent. Sometimes I only listen to the sound and turn off the visual. Like I just try and find different ways to experience the movie so that it like different things highlight to you every time. It's like reading a script multiple times where you like pick out different things. You're like, oh, I didn't think about that last time, or I didn't realize that. And so I try to give myself like different little things and techniques to just like mix it up and see it in a different way, because I do end up watching it. I mean, I watch most of these shows and movies I'm on, I'm watching them like 3 times a day, you know, unless I'm really digging into specific scenes. I'm like watching the whole movie back and forth, or I'm watching the first half multiple times and then the second half, you know. So you're watching such a large scope. But what that gives you is like, you know, okay, the first half is maybe feeling amazing, but why isn't the second half? Or like, what techniques are what's different about the first half than the second half? Like, it just helps you kind of compare and contrast, which is really all we have. Like, it's all experimentation. It's all one person's opinion or a couple people's opinion. So it's like, really, it's just based down to like your opinion, your feeling on what you're experiencing.
I love those like those techniques, because I know for me, I mean, I don't do a lot of video editing. I do a lot more sound editing. But like when we were first learning to edit, we were just kind of learning together. And it just helps so much to really go back and watch as much as you can leading up to whatever section you're on. Because if you just go, you know, a few seconds and you're comparing, like maybe the lighting is different, so you're figuring out how to match that or whatever it is, you don't get the whole scope of it, and you really need to see all of that to make sure it works. But then the techniques of, you know, just watching without sound or only listening to the sound or whatever. Like, I feel like that's such another great way to tune into it, because maybe you are, you know, missing the timing on a joke because you're just worried about lining up, you know, the sound to the visual. But in reality, you're like, oh, this needs more space. So how can I fix that? So I think that's a really great approach.
Yeah, I think it just helps you mix things up. I mean, again, just like having human brains, I'm like, we just need like, we're our brains aren't very good at like monotonous tasks, you know? And so it's like, it's just helping our brains to be like, okay, I'm going to switch this up a little bit and look at it in a different way, which is like, hopefully, like when an audience comes to see your movie or TV show, like they have no expectations. So you have to think of it from their perspective of like, they don't know what the budget was. They don't know what issues you have. They don't know, like they literally don't know anything. And the only thing they have is what you give them. And which is actually to our benefit as filmmakers, because like,
absolutely,
like they don't know the problem. So can we like give them this character or this story and help them experience it without any of that baggage? Like that's the hope, right?
Yeah, that's very true.
Absolutely. I just want to highlight, like, you've worked with some major players in the industry. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes. Only did the latest Lindsay Lohan movie on Netflix. Like,
she was fabulous, by the way. Fabulous.
Okay. I'm so happy. I'm such a Team Lindsay fan. Like,
me too,
Friday,
man.
Like, that girl was a one-stop teenage drama queen. Like, all of that. Like, she's my favorite person. Oh, my God. Parents Trap, my favorite childhood movie. We've gone through this on the show. I'm such a Lindsay fan. So that was such a colorful, amazing, like warm film.
Yeah.
I just want to know for those like I'm sure it was just a transition into your career. How did you, do you work for a large company? Are you still independent and are able to like get these gigs? I'm just curious from, I don't want to be a big time editor, but from anyone who's like, whoa, how do you even get to that level? Just want to break that down just a little bit.
Totally. Yeah, I'm still independent. So I actually like manage my own
company. You go, girl.
Thank you.
Hell yeah. Yes.
Thank you. So, it has come from a lot of, you know, me and my husband's actually a director too. So we started out like producing and directing together. And I would always cut our films as we were doing them. So like our first, I don't know, like 7 films were that way. And so we just started, we like jumped in, like I cut our first film at 19. Like we were just like doing it, you know, doing the thing. That was, and it was still shot on film. So that one was really wild. But like we were transferring HD cam SRs at like the college, like decks at night, like we snuck into the school and like hid from security guards.
You bad teenagers.
Like like we were just like, we're gonna make our movie, we're gonna do it our way.
Obsessed.
So we did that for a while, and you know, they like did well enough. It was still in the era of like DVD sales and stuff, so they did okay. I mean, we didn't see much money from it, but we were making movies, it was working. And at the same time I was doing like reality TV. I think that's a really common first step into editorial is, reality TV, because it's a really good way to like, to get to know the assisting side of it, to get to know like how people like their projects put together. And, it also has very fast turnarounds. So if you're in the reality world, you get really used to turning things around quickly, which is an asset for any team, but like, it's especially fast in reality. So I was doing that for a while and we were still making movies on the side. And then, I guess really it just becomes like, as your network grows, I do, make it a point to like always reach out to the people I've worked with when they like have something that came out that's cool. I just like text them like, I freaking love this. Like I've always just tried to be like, rather than be like just coworkers, I want to be friends with the people I work with. I'm in the room with these people for more than a year. And it's like, we should be like we're spending so much time together. At the end of this, I hope we're friends, not like frenemies. Like,
yes,
you know,
that's,
it's like
independent spirit. Let me tell you, like, love that. That is so indie filmmaker.
I know. Right? Like, well, it is. Like, what else do we have but like our time with each other? Like, I don't, you know. And I think I'm pretty relaxed in the edit room. So I think it's, you know, I've always had pretty great relationships with the people I've worked with, because I don't, we just, I don't know. I've never really gotten in fights with my directors or producers. Like, we just kind of talk it out, talk it through. Not that we don't disagree, but it's just that there are ways to communicate with your team members. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I actually think that's something that I would say to people that are, you know, trying to break in or thinking about doing this in a more full-time capacity is, like, the most important thing is communication. Like, you need to be able to talk about why you chose something. You need to be able to talk to producers and directors about why it's important to you. And you can start practicing those things like right now. Like, if you make a little video and show it to someone, they're going to ask you about it. And that's a good way of practicing, like, how to respond to those kinds of questions. Because in the edit room, like in what I do, like, I'm answering for myself all the time. Like, why did you choose to do this? Why did you do that? What about this take? What about that? You know, like, so you have to get used to that kind of feedback, like, so that it's not personal at all. It's only about the movie, and you need to be able to communicate why you chose something like that. And especially, like, I have had, I would say like fiery conversations about why something's important to me. Like, I was literally like, one time I was like, I will pay money to keep this in the movie. Like, what can I do to keep this in the movie? So there have been times like that too, where you're like really passionate about something and you have to be able to explain yourself, you know? And so I think anyone that's like starting to work with teams for the first time, get used to communicating. And I think that's really hard for editors. We're all a bunch of introverts. Like, we like sitting alone in a room for hours on end, you know, by ourselves. So, like, it's, I would say the vast majority of editors are introverts. And so you've got to get used to talking to people and talking to and being in session with people for 16-hour days and stuff. And you know, I think it's also about communicating your needs. You know, that's something that took me a long time to learn, was that, like, I can go to them and be like, I need an extra couple hours to figure this out, you know? And the vast majority of the time, everyone's like, oh, okay, of course. Yeah, just, like, take your time. It's fine. But, like, there's a lot of fear associated with, like, oh, what if they don't think I'm good enough? What if they don't think I'm fast enough? But, like, everyone is just there to make the best product. And if that means a couple more hours of you working on a scene, then bring it up. Don't, like, go get down the road and be like, oh, I just didn't finish, instead of being like, hey, I need a couple more hours, you know? And so communication is, like, the whole thing with editorial. We're like the movie's therapist. Like, communication is the key to editorial.
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, in so many aspects of filmmaking, like, you can't have an ego. It always has to be what's best for the film. Like you said, you can't take anything personally. But I imagine it's hard as an editor, because you're making so many decisions that you might not get the final, you know, feedback or decision on until, like, you're done, you know, like, as an actor, sure, you're making choices, but you're going to get that redirection right there. You're going to do the next take different, you know, whereas you could edit the whole film and not even get director's notes until then sometimes. So
for sure,
I imagine that's sometimes difficult to, like, kind of come to terms with.
Yeah, that happens to me frequently, actually. Like, anyone, again, who's thinking about going into editorial, you very frequently don't get a lot of feedback during production, and then you put your EC together, your editor's cut, and then you send it off. So it's, like, just as nerve-wracking as it sounds, where you're like, I hope they like it, you know? And every director's different. Like, some directors are like, do you, and some directors are like, I absolutely have to see everything. Do not cut anything from this. Like cut the scenes, but don't lose anything. And then some directors are like, do whatever you want. And some producers are like, absolutely not. You know, like, it depends on the person. And you kind of have to feel that out. Like, something I talk about now that I have more experience, it, like, I'll frequently be like, hey, we're just getting to know each other. I know that there's a couple things I have questions on. I realize you're so busy. If you have a minute to chat about this, great. If not, no problem. I'm going to continue forward. It's just, again, that communication. Like, if you reach out to your team and tell them what's going on and give them updates, they feel much more good about you as the new person. Or, I mean, the thing is, like, almost every movie, TV show, whatever, it's almost an entirely new team. Even if you know one team member, like, you don't know the rest of them. And so it's always coming into a situation where, you know, they need to get to know you. You need to get to know them. You need to get to know their style. You know, even the nicest people and, like, the people that you jive with 100%, that first editor's cut is not going to be what they thought, because they have something in their mind that's even completely different than what they shot on the day. And so it's helping them come to terms too with like what they actually shot and what they have. And so there's a lot of, it's very emotional at first, right? Because I totally understand like where the director's coming from, where they're like, this isn't what I shot. And it's like, it is, but in maybe not the way you thought, or maybe you
saw it. Yeah.
And so, well, and plus, you know,
and you remember things different too, when you're like in the moment on set and then it's like, oh, that's the worst, where you're like, wait, that shot didn't come out the way I thought it was going to. Yeah,
that you were hoping.
Oh, that's exactly. The worst. Yeah.
And again, I think, and so the director's coming at it from an emotional standpoint as well, because this is their first time seeing their whole movie together. And I totally get that. I'm like, it's a shell shock. And I totally understand where they're coming from. And so sometimes, you know, but you're going to get notes back either way as the editor, whether you jump right into session, whether they send you emails, whether they do a phone call. And so I think as editors, it's good to prepare yourself for that. That is your job. Your job is to take feedback and to talk about it and to be able to talk about, again, why you interpreted something a certain way. Because the other thing as editors is like, all we have, we're not usually on set anymore. Right. So all we have is the footage in front of us and the script supervisor notes. And depending on how much they notated or not, you know, you have what happened on set or you don't. And all you get is your footage. And so you're also just interpreting what feels right. I mean, that's really, again, it's all opinion. So it's like, well, that's how I felt it should go. But how do you feel it should go?
Right. But back to what you were saying, that's why it's like so important to have an opinion about every single moment. Because I think on the flip side, as a director, like, yeah, I do want to know why you interpret it, and I'm hiring you. So it's like, let's hear, like, you're a part of the conversation. Like, let's hear why you chose those choices. And it doesn't mean like that's also a bad thing that, you know, a director is questioning you on that. It's just to like understand the interpretation 1000%.
Totally. And those questions are important. I mean, I would never want to just like not have feedback on a project. It would be so strange. Like, oh, if someone came back and was like, this is exactly what I wanted, I'd be like,
read my mind.
I'm in an alternate timeline right now. And what I'm in the, like, what's going on? You know, like, it just isn't that way. Even like when me and Steve worked together, my husband, you know, I mean, we are like, we really jive when we work together, but still there's so many changes. I mean, there's just no way to do it. There's no way to 100%, you know, get it right the first time. And that's what the whole editing process is for. It's just so you can try things, so you can iterate, so you can be more imaginative. It's like, that's the whole process. That's the whole point of the process.
Yeah. And an exciting one.
Yeah.
There's the editor's cut, but what about the director's cut? Is that something at times that comes first that can help the editor and then they fine tune that? Or like, what's the difference there in the jargon that maybe I'm misinterpreting?
I've never been in that scenario where the director cuts first. So usually the editor's cut, and that's a little bit more of a TV term too. Usually it's called, like in features, it's called the assemble edit or the rough cut, but that usually always comes from the editor, because I usually cut while the director's on set. So I'm getting dailies, like I'm only 24 hours behind set. And so I try to keep
for features
up with
too.
Camera. Yeah.
Okay.
So I try to keep up with camera, just because you never know, like if they run into a problem and they need to see something right away, I'm like usually the person who would get the footage as well as be cutting it. So like I've had many requests to be like, okay, you're going to get this footage tomorrow. I need this scene cut like first thing and you need to send it back. So like I'll do a quick assembly so that they can see if there was a problem that occurred or if they have enough coverage. So that happens a lot.
These are big fancy studio money, I take it.
This is on the indies too. Yeah.
Oh shoot.
And definitely the TV. I mean, TV is so fast. TV, you have like eight days. TV is like insane. Like sometimes I'm like, I don't, who came up with this? Features, not everybody stays up with camera. I try to, just because we've run into enough scenarios where something went wrong. And like, I was the one that caught it in post, just because I'm like, hey, what about that insert? Or what about the whatever?
Hi, friends. I'm David Berman. And for 16 years, I performed over 300 fake autopsies on CSI. Crime Scene Investigation.
And I'm John Wellner, and I too was on CSI for 12 years, playing the toxicologist Henry Andrews.
John and I are so excited to introduce CS I Love You, a podcast dedicated to all things CSI, both the show, but more importantly, we'll talk to the heroic criminalists behind America's favorite crime drama. So pull up a chair and join us as we talk about murder, mayhem, and mystery.
It's CS I Love You.
That makes so much sense. I'm just, yeah. I'm like, oh my God, like, what a concept.
But I guess, like you're saying, it does require potentially, what, 4 weeks extra of pay, right? If, you know, but they can't, but I, again, it's, in my opinion, totally worth it because you catch so many issues, or at least you can flag issues and be like, do you need something else here? If you don't, no problem. I can cut around it. But like, do you want something else here? You know? And so it's right. Like, it's nice to be able to have that conversation and not be way down the road in post to be like, now we need a pickup. Like, and there's no money for it. And we're not on set and the actors aren't here, you know, like it's so much easier to get it on the day. And so I think it's worth it. And that's how we, again, we've always done it. But again, when we started, we were fortunate because me and Steve were a team and I was just on set with him. And then I would like literally go home and cut on the weekends, and so like we knew exactly what we were getting, so I would say in that regard we were fortunate.
That's a nice team partnership. Tessa, we're gonna reevaluate our roles.
That's, I know, amazing. that makes so much sense. And like, I didn't know that either, but like, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of films that, you know, they maybe don't have their full budget, so they have to get those finishing funds, so they can't really hand anything off until later. But like you said, that makes it so much easier to catch those things because, you know, you're just watching these takes really quick on dailies, whatever, getting them out, getting them done in the can. And it's like, to have that second set of eyes then to actually be meticulously looking over it and seeing what you're missing, which relates to something I was going to mention, which was that you had said editors aren't on set a lot. And I was just thinking, you know, as a filmmaker, like, I wish if we just had all the money and all the time and everything in the world, like, I would love to have an editor on set with us for that specific reason of, like, catching those things. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes it's not just, like, a simple, like, continuity thing that a scriptie would catch, you know? Sometimes it's things that you as the editor know is going to make, you know, this shot change, transition, whatever, more difficult or more jarring, and nobody else has that brain and that eye, you know?
That foresight for, like, what it's going to be like when you edit it. And that's definitely critical. Like, can you speak more, actually, a little bit to what are you managing while you are on set as an editor? Are you just specifically sitting back, looking at shots, downloading, you know? Yeah, share that process a little bit.
Yeah, so I used to be on set actually, like, in an office, in the offices, like, before COVID. So, like, that used to be pretty standard, actually, to bring an editor out. And then, obviously, now practically everything's remote, which is great. Like, great in some ways. There are really advantages to it and disadvantages, as we all know. Right. But I don't handle footage anymore. I have usually, and I haven't for a long time, only because usually they have a DIT or at least a wrangler to wrangle the data, wrangle the footage so that I can totally focus on the edit. So even on shows, and I also have assistants now, and I usually have one, you know, that's like attached to me. And shout out to Matt Jensen. He's been my assist for like 3 years, and he just recently bumped on our shows, our last couple shows. So he's moved on to editor now, and I'll have to find someone new, but I love him to death.
Congrats to him, though.
Yes, seriously. I love him to death. He's like one of my best friends, and yeah, anyway, he's fabulous. But we've had a real yin and yang over the last few years, because he's, you know, he's that person that's always setting up my bins and setting up the project for me so that I can literally just focus on the edit. Now, in the before times, before I had an assist, when I was, you know, doing these much smaller films, and I was assisting myself, I would usually still have, we still had a DIT on set just so that they could be running footage while I was also working. So we always had a wrangler, But so that person would like transfer last night's footage to me during the, you know, the next morning, and then I could work. And again, this was like when it would take like 4 hours to transfer. Now it's like 30 minutes and you've got everything. But you know, yeah. So but like I said, even in my early days, my policy was to try and stay up with camera. So I would sometimes I would get like 2 days behind camera, but usually I would just, you know, sink all morning and then cut into the night. And then try to keep up with camera. God. So once I had assistants, you know, that became a little easier. We can like, they can get up a little earlier than I can get started, and then I don't keep them late so they can go home. And like, yeah. So we try to like kind of volley that a little bit.
Yeah.
So that, cause I also have a like pretty strict personal policy that like, I don't want my assistants being up till midnight, 1, 2 in the morning. I know a lot of people do that and that's part of their job, but I just like, for me personally, I think they should have a life. I think I should have my personal life, and I don't think it's fair. Yeah, I just don't think it's fair to keep people up at 2 till 2 in the morning, and we're like not curing cancer, we're making movies, you know. So to me, news. I think it's
breaking news to the entertainment industry.
Yeah. So I just think like we should all treat each other with respect, and we should be good to each other, and the movie will still get done, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
normally on a set like that, like let's now like take it to the indie space specifically. Yep. Like it would be typically to have the editor, they'll probably have their assistant there to really help with the ease of handoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And and you were saying you're more so in an office, so you aren't necessarily on set really observing, but you will observe the footage so that way you can review and pass those notes if you see some missed inserts or, you know, whatever you're catching at the moment, right?
Yeah. So that hasn't changed so much over the years. I mean, when I was on set, like literally I could walk next door and be like, I need to tell the director something, or the director would come in and want to watch a few things. It was a little bit more like the old fashioned days when you used to watch dailies at the end of the day, like literally go into a projection room and watch dailies together. Mm-hmm. So it was a little more like that, where you would like sit down at certain points in the day, or they'd be like, hey, can I see this scene? And they'd like literally just walk off set to the office and come sit with me, you know? So we don't have that so much anymore. So I do think that with remote work now, it's usually me like just working away and then passing off stuff like uploading to Vimeo or something, so they can see little things that they've requested. But they're usually so busy, like on an indie film, you don't have time to go watch a scene. Like, are you kidding?
Right.
I'm like, you guys know, like, I think it's time like, for anything like that.
No, I could see that if like you really are scared, you missed it. Like I can see that. But otherwise, like, you're just, on to the next day. You're worrying about the next day.
Yeah, and you don't have time for that. So I, as the editor, I take it upon myself to flag things. So like I try to keep up so that I can send them a little email saying, hey, I think we're missing this. This is how I'd put it or where I'd put it. Here's a quick version of the scene. Or like, so for me, that's like a part of my job. That's a part of what I do while I'm hired during production, especially, you know, because the finesse can come later. But again, we all know all films are like wrought with trouble, you
of
know,
course. Not just indie. It's
you know,
not
like they're just
there.
Everywhere. Yeah. They're just, you know, like every day presents new challenges. And so like part of my job is also helping the team with the challenges, you know?
I was going to say, so you're then also providing a solution with also like by showing, okay, this is what we can do. But if you know, want to go back, then there's that. We love a solutions gal. That's all. That's
what exactly.
And like nowadays, I mean, everybody in like every side of filmmaking is wearing so many multiple hats, right? So like, especially because you do so many indie films, like, are you, I guess, what all kind of do you do? And I know just editing in itself is like a million things, but do you like color correct? Do you work with sound? Like, you know, how much have you branched out of specifically editing?
Yeah. For post? So I would still say I exclusively edit, but all of my cuts, I am very particular about my sound and temp music and color, and like I do full passes on everything. So like I call it fully filled, but like I fully fill the movie with sound effects, music. I do color passes on anything that's not matching. Because I want the experience for the director and producers to be as smooth as possible as well. So though I'm not the one finishing those things, on even in the early days, we would, you know, get at least a sound designer, you know, an editor, right. A sound editor, and we would get a composer, you know, so, cause you can find a lot of really cool people that are starting out too in all of those positions as well. And so yeah. I'm all about the collaboration, and I think that it's really good to have other people. And again, even if they're fairly fresh and green, if they're passionate about it, you know, they'll do the work. I think, you know, most of the time. So, but yeah, so for my edits, I do temp in everything. So, which also has helped me, of course, like when we do get into those later, when we get into the mix room, when we get into color correction, I have a lot of experience with all of those things. And so I can pretty quickly be like, okay, we need to power window this. We need to do that. You know, I actually did color correct our movies in the early days. So that's I did like four or five of our films like color corrected. So I mean, like you said, when it comes down to indie filmmaking, you do what you have to do. Right. And, you know, there are a couple other post positions that can be covered. My husband, like I said, he's a director, but he's done visual effects for our films, you know, stuff that needed to be fixed or stuff that he did from scratch, just because it's like, well, who's going to do it? It's us.
Yeah.
So, and post is really that way. I think post, the various post positions do come down to sometimes we just end up doing it because you can't afford to get someone else, you know, or whatever. So,
trust. I understand that. Trust. I know there's like so much that goes into post that, again, like before getting into this, I didn't realize how many different like layers and people are involved in all of that. Yeah.
Like there really could be a whole team of, I don't know, 10 people just for post, 10, 20, thousands. Yeah. Like it just, it can go. Actually, yes, you pay attention to the credits, y'all. Yeah. You'll see on like some of these, especially like visual effects heavy films, like there's hundreds of VFX editors. Like you're like, really? Like for all the CGI, like it could, it's mind blowing.
Yeah. Well, and nowadays, you know, directors and producers like expect temp VFX. So we do that as well. You know, it is interesting how dynamic all of these NLEs have become. Even since I started, you couldn't do, like when I started, like Avid was still in SD, you like couldn't tell if something was a lamppost or a tree. Like, like it's so different now. And the expectation is very high that like first thing you send back is going to have temp everything. It's going to be practically finished feeling, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, and that's all possible now with like Adobe.
Setting our expectations high. Just, we want this pretty much perfect when you get back to us, future editor.
Final film
ready. No prelims, please. We are here for the final version. That's hilarious. And speaking of VFX, because we're working on a sci-fi thriller, and we're really excited about it. And it's what we've tried to do, because being budget conscious is really be specific with the VFX that's involved, and just it's there to just heighten the technology so that it's like, okay, we're in a world where it's near future, we've got some higher advanced tech, but it's not like we're in a Star Wars film, like everything has to be like super high tech and or like, you know, otherworldly, to put it. So we're, you know, we really like, I'm directing, so I'm really excited to kind of like share kind of what pitches and have that conversation, because having, it's interesting, if I had like given myself more time to like maybe learn After Effects better, which totally went over my head, that I stopped at Adobe Premiere, and I love Adobe, but I'm like, once it gets into the After Effects world, I'm like,
it's a whole different thing.
It's a whole thing. For sure. And I'm like, that's fine. This is where you got to put your money there.
I actually totally agree with you. Yeah. Like, put your money into VFX, everybody.
And so like,
that being said, like, I'm very excited to have a conversation because I don't know that landscape at all. Like, how, like, masking a bit, but, like, how that really works with what you do in post and what you need to prep on set. And I think you had mentioned just now, too, that you've done, like, some VFX consulting or, like, VFX, like, work. So what, how would you have a conversation with someone like me about that and, like, would you yourself be like, yeah, but still, like, you need to pass this on to an actual VFX person because it's not what I'm going to – I'm not going to give you the final thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the baseline is I would say yes. Most editors won't give you a final product. I mean, almost all of us do, like, split screens and things like maybe some small paint outs and stuff like that. Yeah. And your color house can do that too. If you go with, like, you know, someone who's experienced, they can very frequently do, like, quick little cleanups, like sky changes and things like that. So just as a side note, like, if you're ever, like, really in a lurch, your colorist can probably fix some of that stuff up for you. But, you know, what I would say is,
desert flowers, the sky. I was trying to myself make it blue.
You're like, I just wanted to be.
Just needed to be. You know, LA, you think you're going to have a beautiful blue sky, sunny day? Nope.
Seriously. We've all been there though, right? Oh, we're just like, okay, this is not the time of day we wanted, or this is not going the way we wanted, you know, whatever.
I'm going to laugh because Sync, we want it to be like, it's a very, like, the day scenes are very white and, like, just neutral, pale, like, kind of hazy, like, the weather we've been having. And since we're shooting in July, I'm just laughing because I'm like, it's going to be blue. It's going to be a bright blue sky. Yeah. We're going to edit the shit out of that, even though, you know, the day we want it to be ugly looking. Like, it's probably not.
Just so you ladies know, a bright blue sky is a perfect blue screen. Or keying it out.
True.
Okay. So actually, if you have a cloudless, bright blue sky, it'll be pretty easy to key.
Perfect.
Just a side thought. That's how they used to shoot explosions, like against the sky, and then they would key it, like in the, you know, film days.
Yeah.
Oh,
interesting. So sidebar. So usually, like, I have never been super comfortable with my ability with visual effects. I mean, again, I do split screens. I do some of the basic stuff.
She only hands the final product pretty much over. And, like, I don't know what I'm doing, but here you go.
Right.
This is the
problem. I just don't know any of this. But I do very frequently as the editor consult on visual effects. And I have worked with, like, as far as the editor, I have worked with, like, teams all over the world about, like, okay, this, like, key isn't good enough. It's not soft enough. We need her hair back. We need, so, like, giving feedback like that, as well as, like, you know, roto work. I've worked with a lot of CG creatures, so that's all its own thing where you're like, okay, where's his contact shadow? Why does his skin look crazy? Like, all these things.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it gets so weird. Like, visual effects get crazy. The thing that I would say to any indie filmmaker is, in my opinion, this is just a personal opinion, I think you should always start with something practical and then modify on top of it, because your practical, even if you think it looks nutsballs on set, is going to give reference, even if you end up having to replace the whole shot. I also think if you can do something where it's, again, practical but modified, it just always comes off as more real, as better, as more integrated into the scene. Even like, I've worked on so many shows with, you know, full CG integration and they look great, but, like, there's something about having that practical plate that just makes it feel grounded, feel real. It's the grain structure, it's all the aspects of what you get when you are shooting something practically. Like, if that thing was actually there, it would feel different. And so that's what I would say to the indie, anyone making an indie movie, if you can have a practical version, even for reference, it's going to buy you a lot in post as far as any visual effect would go or anything like that. And, like, phones, really cell phones and stuff, like, just get a graphics person to do your graphics before you shoot it. Shoot it practically for stuff like that. Screens.
I was just going to ask about that, because there's a lot of that in our film. That's, like, kind of most of it is, like, some screen stuff So I'm like, do we need to just green screen our phones? Like, well, what?
I would say use a like a white, so you can luma key. So I would not say use green because you're going to get green spill on your actors and stuff. Yeah. I would say use like a bright white light if you're going to key your phones. But I would suggest if you can get graphics and like, I don't know what you're like. OS, I mean, on the phone is supposed to look like
whatever I need to do. Yeah.
I would say do it before, before you get into production, shoot it practically, because the way that screens, phone screens, computer screens, TV screens interact with cameras is different. You can actually see the texture of the phone or the TV or the reflections. All of that can be practical if you're prepared with your graphics beforehand and you're just pulling it up like you would a regular phone, you know, like seeing the screen, if you, it'll look natural to whatever your lighting scheme is if you can have it practically on set on the day. If you can't, then I would say shoot it with a bright white screen, and then your reflections will be a soft white light against the people who are interacting. It'll be you can luma key it. It'll be a little bit easier for you.
Okay, yeah, that's really good advice, because we'd been hearing a lot of, oh, just green screen it, but like, I didn't even think of the reflection then is green.
Well, and that's the biggest problem we've run into is we used to do green screen, we've done blue screen on screens before, and we've just found time and time again that the spill onto the actors and onto the things around it is just, it makes it so much harder to like then integrate it into the scene properly. And so,
but I'd with the camera... White. For sure, like, it would give a reference, but the camera will, like, warp it because it's, like, on the screen, or would it be able to still capture the image?
Well, it depends on, so, if you have, like, say you, or you have your graphics done, then, like, see how, like, no one at home can see this, but, like, my screen is blown out right now because that's how the camera is interacting with it, and you're getting this flare off the screen, right?
Right.
So that's how it would look in real life, because you're just going to have a graphic on your phone. If you have the white light, you will want tracking markers, so like an X on your screen. Mm-hmm. And they have like programs, applications that can like do that for you. Like you can just like look up a green screen app, and it usually has blue, green, and white. And it'll have the tracking markers. So that'll help you. So if you can't get your graphics done first, you have to shoot it with just a blank screen. I would say do it with the bright white with an X on it so that your VFX department can track it, because you need something to track to. So like another problem you run into is like if the screen has nothing, it has nothing except the edge to track to. And it has to define that against people, against a wall, whatever.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
This is so technical.
No, we are like here for it. I'm sure there's people dying to know like that part of it. And I'm sorry for y'all who are like, this is over my head, but like this is a good conversation to get into that extra layer on like, okay, what, you know, we can look into that further now, knowing, all right. You can get an app, you can get different, think about the different colors that will reflect, and there's ways.
Yeah, because you don't want to be cleaning up spill on your actor. No. Like if he's just holding the phone here and you're not even seeing that damn screen, but there's like bright green on their face, you are going to like hate yourself.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. But I feel like that's such a common thing too, that like, a lot of people probably don't even think of as a VFX, but like it is. If you aren't just literally filming like a graphic on your phone, you have to go in and do that. So you have to be prepared to shoot that in order to accomplish it.
Yeah. And that's why I'm fortunate. I work on shows that are big, but even they like don't shoot practical screens. And I'm like, we should have had this. This should be practical. Like, in my opinion, that's the kind of thing, if you can get it done before you shoot, it's going to save you so much time and money in post, because you can also change it later. But to me, if you can keep with what you shot in production, then you don't have to pay for all those visual effects. And and again, even with a practical on the phone, you can modify that later in visual effects, you know? So it's like, again, I would always go practical for something like that. You'll save yourself 100 shots if you can do it practically.
Christy, that is literally the tea of the day. That is like such great advice. And like, no, like we know that we always like, you know, on the show and ourselves with our team, we're like, okay, we're going to prepare as much as we can. And this can be part of the process to be like, all right, now knowing like how much easier it'll be and less expensive. Okay. Like, let's try to get like, if we want a really amazing looking graphic, let's just get, you know, hire like a graphic designer, mm-hmm. like you said, mm-hmm. to really, you know, more affordably, honestly, get something nice together, and then we can throw it up. And if we don't like, we need more adjustments, then we can have a conversation with our VFX artists, and they have, to your point, like more of a reference of what you're going for. And mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. already, like you said, like in the shot. So it's not unnatural to the actors who are interacting with the effects. Yeah. So I think that's really great advice. Definitely going to take that one home.
I practical but modified is how I would go in the modern world with all the visual effects and capabilities we have now, which is incredible. But I'm still all about practicals that are modified for sure.
Makes lovely, sense. Lovely.
Let's make it easy for everybody.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, this has been amazing. Like, I already feel like you've given us so many helpful tips and tricks, like, that we're going to apply to our movies. So I know, especially aspiring editors and everything, like, this is going to be a great episode for them. So if you would like to share any, like, social media, anything like that, that you'd like to share with our listeners so that they can find you and your work.
Yes, I'm Christy Shimmick on, like, all the apps. So it's just KristiShimek. And I think on almost all of them, I can send you guys the info. I think I'm just, it's my name. I might have an underscore in some of them, but.
Oh yeah. You send us your way, and we will link that baby.
Sounds good.
In the show notes. But no, Christy, what gems we got today. This is like now ourselves being a bit more experienced in this whole crazy filmmaking landscape. I love making it so dramatic. It's so crazy. I just feel like we could have this deeper conversation with someone like you who's done such amazing work. And I'm just so excited for our audiences to just like understand that process, because as Tessa said, we came from knowing zilch of like what that landscape is, and it's incredible. Like, the more you as a director even like to just really understand your world and your language and what you're looking for, it just helps everyone at the end of the day. So thank you for conversing with us, gals.
Of course.
We had fun. And we look forward to continuing the conversation with you. And hopefully everyone else does too. So guys, we're here for it.
Woohoo.
Love you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Femme Regard Podcast. If you like what you hear, tune in every Friday for more tips on the filmmaking business and insightful conversations with industry professionals.
We can only grow with your support, so please subscribe, share, rate, and review. You can also join the Femme Fam on Patreon. For more on us, check us out at femregard.com.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.